God, grant me a serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the urge to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Hans from Mission Viejo. My name's Hans. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, Friday night, San Clemente. I did a lot of drinking down here, you know. But it was a long, long time ago, and it was a smaller town then. And I was telling somebody before the meeting, I remember getting lost around here a lot, because I'd be stumbling drunk at like 1:30 in the morning and trying to find somebody's apartment or house or something, and very confusing times. The 20s were very confusing for me. When I got here, I didn't regret my past, because that implies that I cared, and I just was so messed up with alcohol that I didn't care very much about anything anymore. I did want to slam the door on it, though, because it had turned into a lot of trouble. And, you know, it didn't start that way. I didn't expect alcohol to be so troublesome, because for a long time it worked really well, and it made me feel so good. And I had what I thought were great friends and all the things that we talk about, laughter, conviviality. It actually made me better in school, man. I was really good at typing papers when I was drinking. And it made sense. I had a gift for that, and that got me through school, you know. So anyway, I guess the point is that I was really bummed when I got here, because alcohol didn't work anymore. What happened was I drank a lot of it for a long time, and then it just stopped working. And I would drink and drink and drink, and my legs would turn to rubber. And I was shaking and sweating at night, and I was just freaking. And I had this, like, very simple $20 a day habit, you know, the quart of pop-off vodka and a pack of cigarettes and I don't know. That's what it was like. That was all I had left. And that went on for a long time, a lot longer than you'd wish it would. I don't know about you guys, but I probably stopped having fun drinking at least 5 years before I stopped drinking. That last 5 years was nothing but trouble and sick and unhappy and lonely and isolated. So here's what happened. Let me get right to it. When I was young, I grew up in a military family. And I think when I was really a little kid, I got this issue with belonging. I didn't know where I belonged. My dad was in the Air Force, and we traveled around the world until I was about 9 years old. And I had this funny name, Hans, and my mom was full German. And my dad would get deployed, you know. We were over in Germany and France and Japan, and he'd be deployed for like 3 months and come back. And the rest of the time I stayed with my mom and her friends, and they were all Germans. And they all yacked in German all day long, and I didn't know how I fit in. You know, I went to American school, you know, at the bases and stuff. And I don't know, it was just a couple of months ago. I mean, I am 60, honestly, and about a month ago, somebody told me what I had. They said, you're a cultural immigrant, because I didn't really know how I belonged as an American. So I grew up overseas. I came to the United States when I was 9. The only thing I knew about the United States was what I read in comic books. I read comic books about, you know, Donald Duck going to New York or something. So I didn't really know, you know. And my dad was a good guy, but he wasn't like, he liked Europe. He liked camping. So we did a lot of stuff in Europe. Because of that, I became really precocious when I came to the States, because I'd had this tremendous world experience that most of the kids didn't have. And that made me admirable to the teachers, but the kids just thought I was a Nazi, you know? I mean, back in the day, my dad retired at March Air Force Base in Riverside, and it was 1963. And I'll tell you what, man, they were still showing combat on TV. So here I come, Hans, right? Man, I told my friend, I said, just call me Bob, please. Because I didn't want to get, you know, all the razzing and difficulty from kids. I didn't know how to fit in. I wanted to fit in so bad. People today, they go, oh, do you speak German? I go, no, not at all. Because I went home one day after a big problem, you know, at the school. And, you know, I told my mom, that's it. no more sauerkraut, no more sausage, and I'm not speaking German ever again. And she went, okay, she got it, you know, totally, she got it. And so I didn't, and it was kind of a bummer when I got to high school and realized I'd lost a language, because you had to take a foreign language, and I went, I think I had one, but now I don't. So anyway, cultural immigrant. I didn't belong. I had this big empty hole in me. And you know what? If you're only 9 years old and you feel out of center and like you don't really belong, it's kind of like, I thought about it the other day. I thought, you know, it's kind of like skipping a step in AA. You don't get the full package. My parents took good care of me. They did well enough. Everything was good. No problems. No divorce. None of that stuff, you know. My dad drank a little bit too much once in a while, but, you know, nothing egregious, nothing. So I had no excuse that way. But, boy, there was something missing. And we moved to El Toro back in the day when they first opened the, you know, the developments over there. And, yeah, you know what? When I was 10 years old, my sisters were just little tiny kids, and I was a boy, and I was out of the house. I was gone. I never changed a diaper. I don't remember babysitting more than once or twice. And so I was out of the house, roaming the neighborhoods and looking and wondering and thinking about what all those older kids were doing. Because when you're a kid, when you're 10, you start looking at what the older kids are doing. And boy, I did. And I remember hanging out. There was the garage down the street, the pool table. All the older guys were over there, you know, smoking and drinking and hanging out during the day. And I sat around with the young guys, you know. And I'll tell you what, when I was 13 years old and that joint came around the table and they gave it to me, I was like, thank you very much for including me, you know. And so I think... right away, 13, man, smoking dope, drinking, girls, the whole thing. Eighth grade, and I loved it. And it was kind of weird, too, because, you know, there were no liquor stores around to speak of. I think there was one place, so there was no pimpin' booze. You had to steal it, basically. So some of the guys were really crazy, and they'd steal. They'd break into garages and steal it out of people's homes and stuff. And that was nuts and scared the heck out of me. And I didn't want to have anything to do with that. But I was close enough to know what was going on. See, that's the thing about starting drinking and drugging when you're really young, is that it's pretty sketchy behavior, even back then. And I was scooting along right at the edge of that. And it kind of scared me, but it was cool to belong. I was so glad. I was starting to fill up that little space inside me, you know. It was empty. I was starting to go, you know what? These are my friends, man. I am cool enough. And what we did was we would empty all of our parents' booze into like a little mouthwash bottle all week long. And by the end of the week, you'd have about a pint of mixed up God only knows what. But it was alcohol. And you'd dump that in some Coke and you'd go out in the alleyway or out in the Orange Grove and just get plastered, you know, and just pass out in the dirt. And come home and your face was all scratched up and you'd say, well, I was riding Mike's motorcycle and I fell off. So that was the beginning of drinking career for me. Lying, stealing, and just being gone, not hanging out, not being part of my family much anymore. By the time I was 14, I was working at a gas station, because back then you could still wash windows, pump some gas and check the oil and get paid for that. And that was pretty cool. So I started making money. So I didn't go into sports. I started surfing a lot. And I learned how to play tennis. And that was cool, because that's a great date thing. You know, you can meet girls and play tennis. So I got good at that. And I surfed a lot. And I got my car when I was 16. And then I went to Europe for a summer. So I was way too hip to be real, man. I was like, by the senior year in high school, you could not touch me, man, with a 10-foot pole. Because I'd already... like done all this cool stuff, and I had money, and I had a nice car, and I had like 3 surfboards, and I had the big stereo, and I had all these cool friends. I was such a socia in high school. And here's what happened, man. I started drinking more and more and more all through it, every opportunity I had. One time, I was a nice guy. I stopped on the freeway, man. 4 nuns they had a flat tire. I pulled over, man. I saw them and I went over and I changed their tire and they gave me $10 and I went, oh, no, keep it. And they go, no, you keep it. And I took that $10 and you know what? I went to a bar that I knew I could go to and I drank Chivas Regal for the first time. So I'm drinking this great liquor, man. And then I realized the next day that I drank up all the money the nuns gave me and I felt really bad about that. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I did. Anyway, high school was great. You know, alcohol worked, and I went to Mission Viejo High. And then after high school, you know what? The alcohol started getting a little bit twisted, man. It started ramping up a little bit because I was drinking more than everybody else. I knew that. I had friends that were like, now this is weird. I don't know about you guys, but when you grow up in this, like I turned 15 in the summer of love in 68, man. And this area around here, like Laguna, was crawling with dope, man. You could score anything. You could walk across the senior lawn at Mission Viejo High School and score anything you wanted. But that wasn't my drug of choice, so I didn't really care. So I was everybody's designated driver, because when you're wasted on L, man, you don't want to drive. You want to fly, you know? And so I would drive the car and drink and stuff, you know, and everybody thought I was the coolest guy around. I was like their anchor man, and I was drinking. So anyway, high school, you know, by the time I was about 18, I was already hitting blackouts. I was going to parties, and people were talking to me the next day. And you know what? On TV, that sounds funny. In a movie, maybe they make it look like it's funny that you forgot what happened. But I don't know about you, but it made me feel kind of like a little embarrassed and a little weird. Like, what? Like, who are you? Did I talk to you last night? And they're going, we were making out last night. And I'm like, what? I don't even know. I don't even know. And that creeped me out. And I was only 18, 19 years old. By the time I went to Saddleback. Back in those days, this was real blue collar around here. Everybody went to Saddleback. It was actually pretty cool. I went to Saddleback, and then I met all the girls from San Clemente and Dana Point and Laguna Beach. And I went, wow, there's a whole new world out there. It was really cool, you know. So, but I started drinking more. You know, back in those days at Saddleback, you had to take a health class. I don't know if you still do, but you had to take a health class. It was part of the requirement. And I remember I took the 20 questions, you know? The AA 20 questions. I didn't know what AA was. I don't know about you guys, but I saw Easy Does It. It says it right here. Easy Does It on the back of somebody's car. I thought it meant don't tailgate me. I had no clue at all. Not at all. And that's surprising. Now, I think today, I don't know, if you're new or fairly new, you can enlighten me, but back in the day, I'd never heard of AA, really. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it meant. I had no idea. And maybe today, more people know what to do or where to go or that there's AA or whatever, but man, I didn't. So I didn't even care, you know. I took that 20 questions, and I honestly, I did this, man. I'm sitting in the class. I check off about, you know, 18 of the answers, checking them off, and I go, what is this, man? I go, I just checked up 18 of these, and I'm not an alcoholic, right? And I was like 19. I was totally an alcoholic. I totally deserved a seat here. But I didn't know. And I didn't care. And I was still having fun. A lot of fun. And I was making more money and college. You know what? I don't know why, but like I prefaced, man, for some reason, alcohol opened me up, man. It made me feel really open. My imagination would free up. And I was, well, I was an art history major, so I could read a lot of books and write papers about art and stuff. So it was really cool. It was a fun thing to do, and it wasn't, you know, like math, you know, where you have to really think hard. You could just imagine what it was like in Paris, you know. So I wrote papers, and I drank a lot, and I thought I was Ernest Hemingway, and I just had a great time doing that. And the consequence was I actually got good grades in school. I always got pretty good grades in school. Here's what that does for you, at least for a guy like me that didn't feel like he belonged anywhere and was trying to fill up the hole. What that did was it kind of added another brick in the wall, so to speak. Because if you get good grades and you're doing, you look good, people leave you alone and you can do what you want. And what I wanted to do was not okay. I was already real socially unacceptable. I looked good on the outside, but what I really wanted to do was all the forbidden stuff, man. If it was taboo, I thought of it like currency. Like, I can do that. I know about that. I saw that with my own eyes, right? And so it was kind of weird. I was 19, 20 years old, and I was already living this kind of double life. I was one thing here, and I was another thing there. I did okay in school. I went to UCI. I finished that up. Here's the side trip that I took. See, I really did. I thought I was Hemingway, man. I thought I was Indiana Jones. I worked back in the day. They opened up Lion Country Safari, and it was down there where Wild Rivers used to be. And that opened up when I was 20 years old. And everybody, all of you would have had a job there. It's like opening Knott's Berry Farm in your backyard. Everybody I knew worked there, right? Because they had a million jobs. It was totally cool. And I had the gift of gab, and I went there, and they gave me a job on the Jungle Riverboat ride. So I had this whole yak down, you know. Ham jambo batu woti ukaribishwa zambizi safari, you know. It was really cool. And I'd yak for like 45 minutes, and what happened was my buddy said, dude, Hemingway would puke, right? And I said, I don't care, man, it's fun. I got a jungle hell outfit, man. I got my, you know, girls love it. It's, you know. So it got better. The end of the summer came, and I was supposed to go to UCI. Already gave them some money. And one of the things I had to do on the jungle boat ride was I had to pull into the zoological department every evening and fill the boat up with monkey chow and stuff like that for the next day. And so I got to know some of the people in the zoological department. And what happened was, and I was drinking all this time, lest we forget. I was wasted all the time, you know. But if it's working for you, you can do a lot of stuff. You can sell cars and get married and do all kinds of stuff for a while, you know. And then then things go terribly awry. So here's what happened. I went to zoological, and one day, right at the end of that summer, they said, hey, we have an opening in the zoological department. Would you like to learn about lions? And I went, well, hell yeah. Really? And they go, yeah, you know, just da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and go talk to Jack over there, and da-da-da-da-da. And I went, okay, I'm doing this thing. So I took a year off college to go work with the lions. And honestly, it was like, you know, in Jurassic Park where they had those really cool jeeps with the, you know, and the gates and the whole, and the ranger outfit. And yeah, they gave me all that, man. It was awesome, you know. So I had my zebra jeep and my shotgun and my walkie-talkie. And I had 32 lions that I took care of, you know. And it was hot out there, you guys. I mean, imagine a day like today. Nobody's driving through that place, right? It's quiet all day, and the lions are just laying there. And you just sit there and zone all day. So what do? You drink. So I'm out there with 32 lions drinking iced tea colds all day, you know, and smoking. And it's terrible. I mean, you know what? I teach school today. I have for a long, long time, Gift of Sobriety, and the kids love these stories, so I'm not going to get started on those because I've got about 365 of those because I worked there for a whole year. The funny part is, you know, it was part of it was you had to feed the lions, and so we fed them horse meat, and it was a dirty part of the job, man. And everybody that took care of cats had to cut the meat and dust it with the protein and vitamin powder, and then you'd bag it all up and pack it all up, and then you'd give it to all the rangers in the morning, and they'd drive out and feed the cats out on the asphalt so that people could come and take pictures. And it was the nastiest job in the world. It was out in an old industrial building, and it was not like Ralph's supermarket, you know, where they're cutting nice clean pieces of meat. We're cutting like 10-pound pieces of meat, just like cutting wood, like cutting a cord of wood. And I cut my finger right off. And I was like drinking in the morning. I was so pissed. It wasn't my day to do it. My buddy had gone to a party the night before and met some girl and was drunk and called in sick. And they called me at like 5 in the morning and went, Duncan, you got to come in and do the meat. I'm going, no, man, it's not my time. So I went in and I was angry and I felt betrayed and I was working really fast with a really dangerous machine and I was drinking because drinking makes it go better, man. When you're not feeling happy, you get cut the buzz, man. And that's what I would do, you know. So I had it's kind of like driving and drinking. You think you're driving better, right? I thought I was cutting meat really well until I saw my finger fly through the air. So you shut the machine off and da-da-da-da-da, and you know. Anyway, it didn't stop me, okay? It pissed me off. But I'll tell you, about 3 days after I got out of the hospital, I was drinking again. See, this is the thing of it. It was getting worse. That should be a wake-up call, huh? Oh, my finger got cut up. No. No. Just move right on, you know? And drinking. Finished up UCI. Got my first DUI. I was 22. 2.4 blood alcohol. That's pretty high. And I blamed it on my friends, right? Oh, they were making me drink Stoli, man. It was like 2 in the morning. You shouldn't be drinking. I made a mistake. See, I thought I had this thing slick. I thought I knew what I was doing. And I was starting to make big mistakes because I was drinking too much. And I had too many things going on. And my world had expanded. So I was driving farther from home. And I was growing up. And here's the other thing of it. I wanted to appear normal. So I was proud of going to school and graduating. And I was happy that I had a nice car. And I was glad to have money in my pocket and have a responsible job. And but I was drinking a lot. And it got me the first DUI. So I did the whole DUI thing, you know. And you think that'll slow you down? Not a bit. Didn't slow me down a bit. I remember leaving court and going and drinking in the car in the parking lot, man. Just cut the buzz, right? Because I could not stand my feelings because I had this big empty spot and I didn't know how I belonged in this world because nothing was filling me up, okay? I had the school thing going, but I wasn't really filled up by that. I had friends, I had family, I had this community thing, but I missed that whole idea of belonging. What I recognize today is that's that spiritual center that I had not done anything about. Nobody ever told me about it. I don't know. I went to confirmation. I was confirmed Lutheran. I was 13. I told you what I did when I was 13 years old. And I went to confirmation and then I got drunk afterwards. God meant just something I had to do for my mom, you know. So, anyway, in my 20s, man, it started getting a little bit rude, you know. I started meeting people. Here's what I started doing in my 20s. I would leave people behind. As soon as they got too close to me, as soon as they started to nag me a little bit, I remember I was in San Clemente and one of my good friends, man, he said, "You can't drink that stuff like water," because he caught me, you know, in the hallway at the party going, all right, just chugging some vodka down to just get there. I wanted to get there right now, you know. And he's going, "Dude, you can't drink that like water." And you know what? Within a few weeks, I didn't see that guy ever again. I changed groups of friends about 3 times in my early 20s. I never saw him again until years later. I saw one guy at an AA meeting. And he gave me a look, man. Like, "Where have you been, you know? Like, you dropped me like a hot potato, man. Look at me holding the bag, you know?" And I'm like, "Who are you?" Right? Anyway, you know, I lived with people down here in Dana Point. I lived with people in San Clemente. And I had what looked like a pretty nice, reasonable life. And but I was drinking so much that I was burning bridges. And I was making people really unhappy with me. And I was getting a little bit... I wasn't concerned yet, but I was getting tired of it. It got hard to keep lying and faking and deceiving and here's what scared me a little bit. I started to feel that I was a fraud, that I was faking so much that people, even people that were doing the same things I was doing, started to get a little disgusted with me. And when you see that on the face of somebody that you care about, that starts to, you feel it. And then that belonging thing came back again, and I started to think, I got to go. I don't belong here anymore. This isn't helping me at all, you know. So I kept moving, and then I got into the last 5 years. And here's what happened. Alcohol turned around and got me. I started shaking really bad in the morning. I couldn't sign a check anymore. I knew how to fix that. My mom told me about it. When we were in the military thing, she told me about guys doing that. That it was called nervous in the service. And you'd take a little hair of the dog that bit you, right? You'd do a little vodka in the morning or whatever, and it'd calm you right down. And it did. So, what do? You drink all day. I started fixing with alcohol. So I wasn't drinking to have fun anymore. Every 3 hours I had to have a drink or I'd start sweating and shaking again. And it was really creepy, you guys, because I worked at a hospital. I had to write and answer phones for a living. I had to wear a white coat. I had to look pretty decent, and it was really dangerous doing that. But that's what I did. And it got worse and worse, and then I had to start skipping out on jobs. You know, one step away from the hangman, you know. And so I started leaving jobs and moving on. So I worked at a lot of different hospitals, but that wasn't because I wanted to go traveling. It's because I didn't want to get caught. And when it got too close, I'd go, you know what, I'm going to be leaving. Thank you very much for my final check, and I'm out of here. So I worked at a lot of different hospitals, but moving on like that doesn't make you better. I mean, it even says it in the book, you know, doing geographicals and moving on like that and dumping friends and finding a new place to live. None of that was fixing anything. It was just making it more difficult, a little bit crazier. My friends were getting a lot edgier. The kind of people that'll get you in jail, man, like that. You know, when you're at a party and the, you know, coke hits the ground, even if you're not snorting it, it belongs to everybody at the party, man. You know, when they come with the flashlight, they're looking at all of you. And kind of creeped me out. I went to parties. People had guns there and stuff. That's when I stopped smoking dope and doing any kind of drug, because that scared the living bejesus out of me. I was going, that's not me. What am I doing here? That's what was happening in those last 5 years. I was finding lower companions, much lower. I was not participating in family events anymore. I didn't have any close friends. I hung out with people that were doing a lot of dangerous and irresponsible things, and I, got sicker and sicker and sicker. I went to my 10-year high school reunion, and I was 28, 10 years after high school. I don't know what I was thinking. I went there, and everybody was married. They had kids. They had started careers. They were happy. They were handing out business cards. They were high-fiving. People had gotten their life in order, and I was still doing the same stuff. I was like, people were like trying to score for me at the reunion because I still looked like the guy you could score from. And it kind of embarrassed me. I was 28. Light bulbs started going on. A little miracle. I don't know about you guys, but the way that I came in here, it was a miracle. Something changed, and it had nothing to do with me. And it didn't have anything to do with the court system, because that's the next part of the story. Here's what I did. I went to the high school reunion. I felt kind of crappy. I met some girl I'd never known in high school. We dated a little bit, but I was really afraid to date anybody because I knew that they were going to find out how much I drank, like, right away. And she, sure enough, called me on it like 3 weeks later. You know, we're on the phone, and she goes, I think you have a drinking problem. And I go, yeah, well, some people do. And she goes, would you like to do something about that? And you know what? I must have trusted her just enough, or it was the first nice-sounding person I talked to. And she didn't say it like a Jesus freak, you know. She said it just like that. Like with a little grace and dignity, and said, do you think you want to do something about that? And I said, like, what do you mean? And she said, well, my friend went through this step house thing, da 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 da, and Dana Point. And I went, She goes, you think you want to do that? And I said, okay. Okay. Now, that's not my sobriety date, but at least I said okay, and I showed up at the Casa de Sara down there in Dana Point. I don't know if it's still there. And I stayed for a week, and I shook and I shaked and the whole thing, and sweating and freaking, and they took me to my first AA meeting down here in San Clemente, and I don't remember a thing. I think I heard the word God one time, but I didn't care, because I was still like freaking. And then I felt a little bit better. I called my dad on the phone. I told my sister before I left, I said, tell dad that I got a job in LA and I'll be back in 3 days. And I called my dad like 3 days later. And he goes, where are you? And I go, dad, I'm an alcoholic. And he started crying. And I go, what are you doing? I go, you know I'm an alcoholic, right? You know, you'd think that he would, but it freaks people out. It's a scary word, man. At least it was then. I don't know. And I felt dismayed about that. But I told him I was feeling better and I was going to be okay and I'd be home in a few days. Because I only stayed a week. And the guy at the place, he said, you know, now you got to go to AA meetings. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And he goes, you're not going to stay sober just watching TV. You know, you got to recreate that safety net when you get out of those places. And I went right back to my little suburban lifestyle there in Mission Viejo. And I felt like, felt that big, man, when I got home, because everybody else looked bright and shiny, and I felt like the only one in town. I felt like the target, that everybody was looking at me, and it made me feel really, really scared. And I didn't know how I belonged in the world. I didn't know how to belong in AA. I went to a few meetings half-heartedly. The girl that I was that said, hey, you want to do something about that? She wasn't in AA, and I kind of glommed onto her, you know, like she was the higher power, and that lasted about 3 months, and then I drank again, because she left, and I felt listless and afraid, so I drank, and don't do that. If you've already done that, then you know what happens. You drink a little, and then you drink a lot more, because you want to get it going right now. So I was messed up within a week. Within a week, I was back in a step house. My dad came and got me, dragged me off to... Then I went to Stanton Step House, man. That's the armpit of Orange County, okay? You're up there going, oh my... They called me Country Club. I was there for 30 days, and I mean, I'm with people that were doing the weed patch to the neuropsych unit to jail to the step house to the weed patch. And that's what they were doing. And I was like, oh, my God. But I was cool, you know. I did the drill. I stayed there 30 days. I felt great. I learned how to cook. That was my job there. I had to work in the kitchen with the guy that was the cook. And I learned a little bit about cooking. That was interesting. But what I didn't learn was about staying sober for any length of time. So I got out of there and I started drinking again very shortly thereafter. And it got dangerous, man. I got arrested 2 more times that year, you know. I got a drunk in public, and then I got another DUI. And then the court system, you know, the criminal justice system will just squeeze you down till there's nothing left. And I can't imagine what it's like now, because back then it cost a lot of money, and now it costs a lot more. So I think I would have been dirt broke real quick. Anyway, bottom line was, you know what? They squeezed me down real tight. Life was getting very uncertain. I felt very confused. And I had my last drink, man, in the racquetball courts at the Mission Viejo Rec Center. And I was sitting up there nursing a little half pint of vodka. And then I wanted to go get another one, and I realized there were like 12-foot fences, you know? And you couldn't get out except the front door, and my dad was sitting right out in front there. And so I had to walk out and say, it's done, man, let's go, you know. And he took me to my alcohol counselor, and then I ended up going with my dad down to the Laguna Canyon Club. And you know what? I didn't have another drink after that. I got a sponsor. I had to. The court system told me to. The judge told me, I don't want to see you back here without somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous to vouch for you. And I'm like, ah. I mean, I got to ask somebody to come to court with me? And he goes, yes. And so I had to do that, man. I was down at the Canyon Club, and it was like one day before the thing, and I had to reach across the table, you know, and tell this guy. All I heard was he lived in Mission Viejo, and I said, "Hey, will you come to court with me?" And he said yes, and he did. And we started hanging out together, and he had a year and a half, and I thought that was a miracle, you know. And I started going to meetings with him, and he knew a lot of mom and pop small meetings, men's meetings, you know, book study meetings, 12 and 12s, and I started really hearing the language, and I'd never heard this language before. It's amazing. If you've never heard the language before, I felt like they knew me, you know, right away. And that whole sense of belonging started to drift away. I started to understand that I was in the right place at the right time. And I was so glad not to be sick anymore. It was a complete miracle to get a 30-day chip. I hadn't been sober in my adult life for 30 days in a row. Maybe 3 days in a row. I don't even know when. I drank every day as often as I could. So, yeah, I got with it, you know. I went to my first convention at the end of that summer. Had some jobs. We were talking about jobs at the break, you know. Cleaning ashtrays back when everybody smoked inside the meat. Oh, my gosh. Cleaning ashtrays, setting up chairs, doing all that stuff. And I started doing that, and I started sharing, and I started to feel more comfortable. If you're new or relatively new, and I saw a few people, you know, stand up, and I'm pleased that you did that. That's a good sign that you were able to stand up and say, "This is who I am, and this is where I belong on a Friday night." Because I started to believe that I was in the right place. I started to believe that I could have something different. I started to believe the promises, and that somehow, just by hanging out with you guys on a Wednesday night or a Friday night or a Saturday afternoon, by talking to you on the phone, that somehow that trust, that miracle of trust, was going to create a safety net for me. I was going to feel like I belonged and that I was going to be okay. I started to sense God. I completely bypassed that step in my growing up years, and it had nothing to do with religion. It had to do with peace of mind. I felt peace of mind. I wasn't lying anymore. When I shook people's hands, I meant it. I was able to look at people in the eye. I was able to start making decisions that were positive. You know, my life's been great. I mean, today, yeah, you know, I could tell you a whole litany of gratitude. My list is a mile long, you know. My daughter just graduated from high school and is going off to the university, and my son's married now and he's doing great, and life is good, and I'm healthy, and my wife's healthy, and all that good stuff. And I have a host of friends, and you know what? Every week I go to 2 meetings, and every week I have lots and lots of communication with other people in the program. My phone always lights up right when I need it, man. People text me or they call me or something. I was on vacation last week and I was just so pleased, you know, that people were still, that they knew that I was on vacation and they were still calling me. I've had a lot of wonderful, wonderful things happen in the program. If you stick around, miracles do happen. But mostly what I tell newcomers is you're not going to become something different. You're going to become who you were supposed to be all along. Every good thing about you is going to get polished up and cleaned up. It'll take a little time. What else have you got to do? Right? I didn't have anything else to do. This was the only place I could come where I was safe. I couldn't sit at home. My mom and dad thought I was like a minefield, you know, ready to blow up. And so I came to lots of meetings, and you know, within a short period of time, I felt better. Within 3 years, I was back at school. I was getting my teaching credential. I could make decisions and read and think again. And then it takes off from there, you know. It might not be that way for everybody, but I do know that I haven't met too many people in the program that regretted all the days they've been sober. I've met a lot of people in the program that regretted, like, not getting it right away because they wasted a lot of time. I've met people that didn't get the yets and then they got them and they regretted that because people had told them, "Don't do that." You know. I've never gotten a DUI. Well, don't get one. Anyway, what a wonderful opportunity to share with you guys tonight, being down here in San Clemente again, and thank you very much.